It's gonna be all right.
This is KAYT, Gina Alexandria.
No need to worry.
The gospel is on the radio at 88.1. Call up somebody. Tell them it's going to be all right. KAYT. Got the gospel transmitting all day.
This is BJ, and I would like to welcome you to our show, Just Stuff. This show is about ordinary people just like you, just like me, combining our efforts in a positive way to make our community better, one day at a time, through conversation, encouragement, resources, empowerment, and just plain talk. Remember, you are the best part of this show.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bree Victor. I am the community lender with Red River Bank, and today I'm sitting in for BJ. To give you some background about me, I specialize in financial literacy, down payment assistance, low to moderate income programs, and credit. My goal is to empower individuals and families by providing the knowledge and resources they need to navigate the financial world, especially when it comes to home ownership. I am passionate about helping clients overcome barriers to traditional lending and making financial opportunities more accessible to everyone. So today, I would like to get more in detail about credit. So from like the past shows, we've talked about different things dealing with credit. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper, and I'm going to start off with hard inquiries and soft inquiries. So with the hard inquiry, you know, or a hard pull, like most people know, typically it causes a small temporary decrease in your credit score, and the drop is usually about 5 points or less, but it can vary depending on the credit profile. If you have a certain credit saturation, you know how we talked about having a mortgage, an installment, a major credit card, and a minor credit card, if you have multiple or very little of one over the other, of course the effect on of the inquiry is going to differ. So let me tell you what happens. So when you get a hard inquiry, it occurs when a lender or a financial institution checks your credit report to make a lending decision. So let's say you apply for a mortgage or auto loan or a credit card, even a personal loan. This is usually when you make your hard inquiry, right? And the reason for this impact is that lenders have to make this to assess your creditworthiness. So if you have multiple credit accounts in a short period of time and you apply for them, it can suggest that you have some type of financial strain or desperation and excessive borrowing, which can make your score dip as a result. And so the inquiry itself can remain on your credit report for up to 2 years. And the impact on your score is generally about short-lived and often fades away in about a few months. So when you are making these hard inquiries, make sure you consider a few things. You know, there are multiple factors. If you do hard inquiries in a short period of time, especially between 14 to 45 days for the same type of credit, it may be treated as a single inquiry. And so what do I mean by that? There's something called the shopping window when you apply for a mortgage. So you have 30 days in order to allow an institution to pull your credit, and it only be treated as one single inquiry, okay? Same goes for auto loans for the most part. And too many hard inquiries for different things in a short period of time can negatively affect your score. And it can signal, again, financial distress or desperation. So that's hard inquiry. So let's go ahead and talk about a soft inquiry or a soft pull. A soft pull is a little bit different because with the soft pull, it doesn't affect your score at that much or even at all. Because what happens is very non-intrusive. It's just a check to your credit. And it just basically takes a look at your overall credit profile. And usually with the soft inquiries, what happens, we use this when a person may try to check their own credit report or when a lender tries to do a pre-approval for an offer. So, you know, like some of those credit card offers you get in the mail that says you're pre-approved for this, that's considered to be a soft inquiry because technically they didn't check the full profile of your credit to where it affected your score. They're just saying, based off of the knowledge that we have, without being too in depth, we think you can qualify for this with no problem. Now, here's the thing. If you do receive those things in the mail and you apply for them, then the application process will cause you to get a hard inquiry, okay? So be very, very careful about that. And also, be aware of the small print when it comes to that, because the small print can very well say your interest rate could be high, like 25-30% for a small amount of money. And just because they say you're pre-approved for $40,000, once they actually check your credit, you may not be approved for that much, or you very well may be approved for more. So just be aware of that. And also, sometimes employers, depending on where you apply for a job, they may check your credit just as a part of your background check. Especially if you are going into a position where you're dealing with any type of money, of course they want to check your credit to see if you had any money issues in the past to kind of make sure you don't do anything shady with the company. So don't get offended if the employer tries to do a credit check for your background. It's all a part of the process, especially if it's something dealing with money or any type of financial resources. And the reason why the soft inquiry has no impact is because it's not really tied to any type of request of new credit. You know, it doesn't reflect any new borrowing behavior or financial risk in some way, like the hard inquiry does. So just because you receive a letter in the mail doesn't mean that you have to move forward with the offer. It's totally your choice. And 9 out of 10 with those offers, if you go to your financial institution, they can look at the offer, let you know if it's legit, let you know if it's worth it. And if you do need something like that, they'll be able to guide you and say, okay, yeah, let's look at everything. Let's look at your finances. If you need more money or a loan, let's see what we can do in order to work that plan. All right. And also, just as far as like an impact on your score, the difference between the two, the hard inquiries, they have an impact on your score, but they only impact your score 5 points or less. The soft inquiry has no impact on your score. And why is that? Because the hard inquiries are tied to a credit application, where a soft inquiry is not. You know, it's mostly used for informational purposes or promotional purposes. So again, if you get anything in the mail where a soft inquiry is made and saying that you're pre-approved, you don't necessarily have to go with it, because it's just saying, hey, just based off of the little facts that we know, feel free to get this offer. But again, you can always turn it down, so don't feel pressure. And as far as visibility to different types of institutions, most of them are able to see the hard inquiries. They're mostly visible to all lenders. When they review your credit report, it's usually close to the end of the credit report. But soft inquiries aren't typically visible to other lenders, and it really doesn't affect their decision-making process when it comes to giving you any type of credit, okay? And with that being said, I want to talk about the difference between secured and unsecured credit. All right. The key differences between secured and unsecured credit lie in the presence or absence of collateral, the level of risk to the lender, and the potential impact on the borrower's financial situation. So let's really dive deep into secured credit. All right. Secured credit is credit that is backed by an asset or collateral. If the borrower fails to repay, the lender can seize the asset to recover the money owed. Now, what exactly does that mean? I know I said a mouthful right there that can kind of be just a word salad, but let me break it down to you. When you have a mortgage, the collateral is considered the house. When you have an auto loan, the collateral is considered the vehicle that was purchased with the loan, okay? And with secured credit cards, the deposit you made into the account, which will serve as the collateral, all right? So it's really, really simple. Collateral is always tied to an asset that the lender can claim if the borrower defaults. And a default is just a fancy word for not being able to pay, or is too late in the payments to where they can't keep up and they need that taking away from them, okay? And like I previously said, in a mortgage, the lender can foreclose on the home if the payments are not made. Now, speaking as a lender, do we necessarily want to take that away from you? Absolutely not. You know, we don't give you something just to take it away. And also, when I go through the process of qualifying you for a home, I do it in a way where I feel this amount that you're able to pay per month is the best fit for you at the time, as far as your financial profile. So I go into it saying, this is a comfortable payment for you. I don't try to make you pay more than what you owe. And I'll get down to that a little bit more in this this talk, because I kind of break down how I look at debt to income ratio and everything like that. So, but right now we're talking about secure credit. And let me tell you, as far as secure credit, there is a risk to the lender and there's a risk to the borrower. So the risk to the lender, it's a lower risk because the lender can recover the value of the collateral if the borrower fails to repay. So we love secure credit, you know, because there is something there where if you were to not pay it, we could just take it back. And as far as you, as the borrower, if you don't pay or if you default, the risk that you have is just losing the collateral. So if you don't pay on your home, the risk that you have is losing your home. And if you don't pay on your car, you risk losing your car. If you don't pay on your secured credit card, the deposit that you put in order to start the account, you're going to lose that. You know, so again, there is a loss on both parts, but one loss is a little bit greater than other. Now let's talk interest rates when it comes to secured credit. So because the credit is secured, it's less risky to the lender, which in turn typically comes with a lower interest rate compared to an unsecured credit. What does that mean? Think about a house or a mortgage. A rate for a mortgage right now, I say average rate is in the 6%. Now with the car, average rate could be about 5%, but those are payments over the course of years. Versus if you have something where there's no collateral to be collected, it's a higher risk, so the interest rate is going to be a little bit higher. So a lot of unsecured credit cards may have an interest rate of 24.99%, and you're like, wow, that's really, really high. Yes, but if you don't pay that card, there's nothing they can take away, you know? So of course, if there's something that can take away, it puts the person more at ease. So of course, the interest rate is going to be a little bit less. And as far as about credit limits, you know, the credit limit is often determined by the value of the collateral. For instance, if a car loan may not exceed the value of a vehicle being, the car loan may not exceed the value of the vehicle being financed. Same thing with the house. You know, if you apply for a mortgage loan and say I offer you $150,000 for the mortgage loan and you want a home. So you say, okay, well, let me get a house that's $150,000. You very well can get a house that's $150,000, but as the bank, once I appraise the home and it comes back and the house is about $140,000, will I give you that $150,000? Absolutely not. I will only give you the value of the home, which is the collateral, correct? You follow me. I know you do. And as far as the approval requirements, since there is collateral involved and it depends on the type of secure credit is usually easier to qualify for compared to unsecured credit, especially for those with poor or limited credit histories. I love whenever I have a customer who comes in and they may not be able to qualify for a home right now. I love to do a credit analysis and a financial analysis, and I would tell them most of the time, hey, apply for a secured credit card, put this amount down, don't spend more than 30% of the credit limit, and you will see your credit move in the right direction in time. Okay? And with that being said, you know, that helps people who have a limited credit history or poor credit history because they're able to rebuild by making proper payments. And that's what it's all about. Your payment history is so important when it comes to credit. Okay? And let's talk about unsecured credit. The definition of unsecured credit is credit that is not backed by any collateral. Lenders often offer unsecured credit based solely on the borrower's creditworthiness and ability to repay. So these are like your major credit cards, right? The credit cards, the Discovers, the American Express, you know, where you can't necessarily go into a bank. You would have to apply online, you know, so that's what I'm talking about, you know, where personal loans, you know, these loans are often used for various purposes, such as home improvements or debt consolidations, and don't require any specific collateral. Another huge unsecured form of credit is student loans. And I know student loans haunt a lot of people in the United States, okay, or even the world. And typically unsecured loans to help cover your educational expenses are in unsecured for sure, you know, because you're not paying out of pocket upfront right away. But most of the time, once school is said and done, you will have to go ahead and pay those back or get in a position or a program where they forgive those for you. Okay. And so let's talk about the collateral when it comes to unsecured loan. And you guessed it. Like I said before, there is no collateral involved. The lender relies solely on the borrower's ability to repay based on their credit history, their income, and other factors. If you are able to qualify for an unsecured loan, credit card, or any type of unsecured credit, that is truly a badge of honor because it's saying that you are doing well with your credit history, with your financial history, that you are able to be trusted. Now, if you have a secured form of credit and you don't do right by it, sometimes it's very, very hard to have the institution trust you again in order to pay another form of unsecured credit back. So if you do have that option to have unsecured credit, definitely make sure you do right by it for sure. And as far as risk, there is a risk to the lender, there is a risk to the borrower. The risk to the lender is much higher since there's no collateral to recover if the borrower does not pay or defaults on the payments, okay? And if the borrower fails to repay, the lender may have to pursue legal actions such as collections or suing for repayment. And another thing about that, if you are ever put in collections for any reason, it takes 7 years for that negative debt to drop off your credit report, okay? And if by any means that it keeps getting reported because you're calling or you're awake and a sleeping giant because it could be 5 years down the line, it's about to fall off in 2 years, and you decide you don't like it on your credit report, so you want to go ahead and call them and see what you can do or even inquire about it, consult your financial advisor or a financial institution before you do that, because again, you can awake a sleeping giant and say it's going to fall off next year. That's the seventh year, but you call them, they will update that profile and start that time clock over to day one. So now you don't have a 1 year to allow it to fall off. You now have seven. So be very, very careful about that. And the risk unsecured credit has for the borrower, if the borrower does not repay the debt, their credit score will take a significant hit, but they do not lose any physical asset like a home or a car. So let's talk a little bit about that. If you have a credit card and 35% of your credit score is payment history, so if you have a credit card and you do not make a payment, you may see your credit score drop quite a bit. Let's say it drops 50 points, but once you recover that payment and you get back on track in good standing, it may only go up about 20 points. Why is that? Why doesn't it go back up the whole 50 points? Because it's like failing a test when you've had all A's the whole semester, okay? That impact is so significant because the creditors trusted you to do right. Because we saw your financial profile, we saw your financial history, we saw your credit history, and we're like, wow, this person's such a great candidate. But then, in a sense, it's almost like you let us down. And I know that kind of seems a little bit harsh, but I really want to drive home the reality of how easily manipulated credit can be. So you have to make sure you really do right by it when you build that trust with an institution. And as long as that institution trusts you, the world is truly your oyster. And you can honestly walk in there and you can pretty much get almost anything you want in reason. Okay. And as far as the interest rate, since it is unsecured credit, it poses a higher risk to the lender. So it often comes with higher interest rates compared to secured credit. All right. And with that being said, think about some major credit card companies. If you really read the fine print, you'll see that your interest rate could be 10%, could be 20%. And of course, you don't really pay attention to that, because if you're smart money wise, then that really doesn't affect you because you know you're not going to spend past 30% of the credit limit. And you also understand that once you get that bill in the mail, 9 times out of 10, if you don't make the minimum payment, you're going to go ahead and pay it off. So that interest is usually not something that you truly see. Or if you see it, it's on such a small amount compared to the whole that it doesn't have very much effect. The credit limit is generally determined on unsecured credit by the borrower's credit worthiness and ability to repay. So just because you and your friend apply for the same unsecured credit, like a credit card or a loan, your friend may qualify for more or they may qualify for less based off of their credit profile. And the borrowers with good credit histories may receive a higher credit limit. Even if they request something lower, most companies say, hey, even though you requested $5,000, you qualify for this $10,000. So that's a good thing. And it's totally up to you. You don't have to take that. You know what you're able to handle. We just tell you what we're able to offer you based off of what we see. So it's okay if you're offered a little bit more and you say, you know what, that's too much of a risk for me. You know, I want to make sure I'm fiscally responsible at all times. So I know if I get this $10,000 limit, I'm a swipe up like I'm Beyonce's daughter. And you definitely don't want to do that. So know your limits for sure. And unsecured credit typically requires a credit score that's higher and a more stable financial background to qualify, as lender need to be confident in borrower's ability to repay without the safety net of the collateral. You know, so again, if you qualify for secured credit, unsecured credit, pat yourself on the back for sure, because that means that the lenders are really trusting you without that safety net. You know, think about it as allowing a new driver to borrow your car to drive to the store. You know, if you give that 16-year-old new driver your keys to your car and you trust them, and they go to the store and come back, their car has no scratches, you know, they fill up the tank with gas, how likely are you to give them your car again? More likely to give them your car again. But if that 16-year-old goes to the store, they let a basket hit your car, now you have a dent in the door, or they come back, your tank's on E, or you have all kind of scratches, a flat tire, because they were driving reckless, what's going to happen? You're not going to trust them to give you the keys back. Or how about this? How about they do well, you know, for the first few months or even a year, and then they come back and they hit a pole and they don't tell you, or they hit something and you see it and you're like, whoa, what happened right there? And they're like, oh, I hit it. There's a cost to that. So what's going to happen the next time they ask to borrow the keys? You're probably going to be like, no. Or you're going to say you're only allowed to go so far, and then you bring the keys back. So it's almost like a probationary period in a sense, where if you lose the trust, then you're looked at a little bit differently until you're able to gain that trust back. And trust is something that is slowly gained but quickly lost. So be very mindful of that, okay? And lastly, I want to share with you how lenders assess creditworthiness and what role debt to income has in the process of home ownership, all right? Lenders assess an individual's creditworthiness by looking at their credit score, their credit report, their income, their assets, and you guessed it, their DTI. Debt to income, or DTI, is a total monthly debt payments divided by gross monthly income. Let me say that again. Debt to income is your total monthly debt payments divided by gross monthly income. So what is total monthly debt payments? That's all of your debt, your credit cards, your loans, your bills, divided by your income before taxes. Now, we don't necessarily look at like utility bills or anything, but we do look at credit cards, we look at loans, we factor in student loans, you know, whether you have a government loan or a conventional loan, there is a calculation that we use for student loans if you are not making payments on them. And also we look at if you owe child support, that's a part of that as well. You know, so that's what we divide your gross monthly income by. And gross monthly income, like I said, is just your monthly income before taxes or any deductions are taken out. So typically DTI of a 36% or lower is what we consider ideal for most loans. That is saying that we're not piling a whole bunch of debt on you in order to pay back. And like I said, as a lender, I'm not in the business of allowing you to default on loans, because me as a person who looks at your financial profile, I have the responsibility of seeing what you're able to afford. It is not my job to get you so high into debt that you're not able to pay back anyone. So that's not what we do. And as a lender, I may sometimes accept a higher DTI, especially if the borrower has a strong credit score or a substantial income. So if I see that you make a good amount of money a month and you can easily recover if you were to fall, you know, exceptions can be made. But all in all, no matter how much money you make a month, I still want to make sure you're in the best comfortable financial position possible before I approve you for anything. So let's get a little bit more in depth about the front end ratio and the back end ratio. The front end ratio is the portion of your income that goes toward housing costs. So like your mortgage, your property taxes, your insurance. And me as a lender, I often prefer this to be between 28 and 30%. And that's because, again, I would never want to put you in debt above your head to where you're not able to pay it off easily, okay? And I understand a lot of people, you know, hard times do come, and we understand that. So instead of taking 100% of your income in order for you to afford the home of your dreams, I say, let me just take a portion of that, you know, as far as part to hold, so that if that rainy day does come, you won't be in such a financial strain. And the back end ratio, this includes all debt obligations, so like your housing and other debts, and should generally be below 36 to 34%, depending on the type of loan. Of course, government loans like FHA loans were pretty much made for those who had a little bit lower of a credit score and didn't have a higher income, in a sense, to be able to give that community an opportunity of home ownership or able to get some credit in order to advance in the world. So again, it is not my job to put you in a whole bunch of debt to where you're not able to repay, because I don't wish money problems on anybody. So I want to make sure that we get you together and get you together healthily. So I thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. And if you would like a free credit report, please visit annualcreditreport.com and get your free credit report once a year from all three bureaus.
It's like you're looking through a telescope. You see where you're going to be. Growing, getting better. You're not the person they see. Can't be mad at the things you've been through, because they built your muscle. Now you're stronger than you've ever been. They can't stop.
Knew us a long time ago. He loved us enough to allow us to be born. He loved us enough to allow Jesus to come. Jesus loved us enough to die for us. It would be a disservice to Jesus not to love ourselves after all he went through for me and you. God elevated us by loving us. Jesus elevated us by dying for us. The Holy Spirit elevates us by living inside of us. Keep God first and be your best self. Don't give negative words from others power over you. Let God change you from a caterpillar into a butterfly. Just a reminder, the best is yet to come.
My contact information has changed. My email address is rosieh615@gmail.com. My telephone number is 318 442-6011. Thank you. God bless.
This is the 70,000-watt voice of the community. KAYT, Gina Alexandria.
Good morning. It's time now for Second Union Baptist Church radio broadcast with Reverend Joseph Martin. The church is located 6436 Old Baton Rouge Highway, Alexandria, Louisiana, 71302. You can phone 318-445-4875.